Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us again here at Star Legacy Foundation. I am honored to be joined by Rachelle Dumas. She's a registered nurse, an entrepreneur, and the mother to nine babies who left us too soon. In honor of those babies, she founded A Light After Nine, which is a nonprofit organization supporting families who are enduring their own infertility and pregnancy loss journeys. I am so happy to welcome her today, and thank you so much, Rachelle, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So obviously, with your introduction, one of the first things that stands out, certainly to me, and I think to probably most people, is nine pregnancy losses. That just is a heartbreaking number. One is too many for anyone, but nine is
Yes.
just, absolutely just devastating. And so I want to start there. And can you just share us a little bit about your journey and your various experiences with pregnancy and pregnancy loss?
Absolutely. So when I first got pregnant, which was 2018, I had a positive pregnancy test and I went to the doctor because I was bleeding and I was diagnosed with a miscarriage. And that was my first pregnancy. He went on and said, very casually, mind you, that I would go on to have a baby and it wouldn't be difficult, that this was just a normal part of pregnancy. And I believed him because what else was I supposed to believe? That's what my OB said, and I didn't know too much about all of the testing and different issues that could go wrong with a pregnancy, just the baseline issues. I'm a nurse, but I was a critical care nurse at the time, so I can save your life, but I couldn't tell you too much about maternal health at the time. But I went on, and in 2020, after returning from a nursing travel assignment in New York, I was at work and I was feeling weird. And I took a pregnancy test and I was pregnant again, but I was bleeding. And this time I went to the ER and I was told that I was having twins. And I was told that I was having a threatened miscarriage and to just follow up with the OB. I'm like, okay, so schedule an appointment with the OB a few days later. By the time I got to the OB, I had 10 out of 10 abdominal pain and cramping. I had a lot of bleeding and I just was feeling horrible. I was feeling horrible. So she did the ultrasound, said everything was fine. She did some blood work, just like the basic hemoglobin, just to check my red blood cells and things like that. That was fine. So I was sent home. And my pain got worse. I was going back and forth to the ER like she told me to do. I kept getting sent home. It just was like a game of cat and mouse almost. And at 13 weeks and 3 days, I lost my first baby. But then all of my symptoms went away. So I was like, maybe that was the baby exiting, you know? So I went to the OB, confirmed the loss, and then I was so comfortable with my pregnancy at that point. I felt good that I allowed my friends to throw me a gender reveal. And that morning of, I woke up and I was wet and I thought I urinated on myself. And about an hour before the gender reveal, I went to the bathroom and the baby just fell out. And I was devastated because I knew something was wrong and I didn't trust my instinct. But at the same time, I had been to the ER so many times with actual real symptoms, as you would call it, and they kept turning me back. So this time I was like, I'm not going to go because I don't really have any symptoms. I just don't feel right. But, you know, I lost that baby. And then I went to the ER. The ER doc asked me, what brings you here? I said, I just lost my baby. I was 15 weeks and 3 days. And she asked me, how did you even know you were pregnant? As if I wouldn't know that I was pregnant. It's the same ER that I've been to numerous times throughout the same pregnancy. And I asked her, did you want to see a picture of the baby in a toilet? And she said, yes. And to her surprise, she said, that's a baby. So that definitely was like, looking back on this, that's definitely like a idea of what my pregnancy would have continued to look like, unfortunately. I went on to have early miscarriages. My OB diagnosed me with cervical insufficiency. So my cervix is too weak to hold a baby. And usually, after the baby gains enough weight around the end of the first trimester, beginning of the second trimester, it puts too much weight on the cervix and the cervix opens. So in order to prevent that and keep the cervix closed, you put in what's called a cervical cerclage or a suture. She said you have to make it to 13 weeks to get that. The issue was I kept having early miscarriages. So I went on and I went to work and had miscarriages and celebrated birthdays, went to funerals, had early miscarriages, and I made my OB aware of this, and she never referred me to a specialist. It wasn't until a manager of mine was like, "You need to see a reproductive endocrinologist and geneticist." And I'm like, I never even heard of those doctors. I didn't know that was like a thing. You know, I knew of an endocrinologist from an adult health standpoint who, you know, treated diabetes and thyroid issues, but never a reproductive endocrinologist. And then a friend of mine, her sister, invited me to her OB practice, and she gave me a prescription for progesterone to help keep my cervix strong enough to make it to 13 weeks. I saw the reproductive endocrinologist and she gave me the best plan of care. That was like the first time I felt really good about a doctor. She said, "We're going to check the lining of your cervix, make sure there's no inflammation. We're going to check the shape of it, make sure that's not causing any losses. We're going to test you for all these autoimmune diseases, you know, everything that could possibly cause a miscarriage." I felt so great. And then the geneticist did some blood tests on my husband and I to see if there was a genetic component to our losses. And there wasn't, according to the test that he ran. And on a day of the procedure where the reproductive endocrinologist was supposed to check the lining of my uterus, I found out I was pregnant. So she stayed with me for the first trimester. And I also started the progesterone this trimester. I made it to 13 weeks, so I graduated to a maternal fetal medicine doctor, who is the doctor that puts in a cervical cerclage. That doctor successfully put in a cerclage and then told me to come back at 20 weeks, which was 7 weeks later. Now, I already had five pregnancy losses, so I advocated to be seen sooner. And she refused. She said, "This cerclage won't fail, but if it does, you'll have excruciating pain and bleeding." And I said, "Okay, but I just don't feel comfortable. Can I be seen sooner?" And she refused. So, no symptoms. 20 weeks gets here. I feel great. The ultrasound tech is checking my baby and mid-ultrasound. The tech walks out and the doctor walks in and says, "Mrs. Dumas, your cerclage failed. And the baby is healthy, but you need to go and deliver that baby." And I'm shocked because I had no symptoms. And I told her that. I said, "You tell me I have symptoms. What are you talking about? I have no symptoms. I feel great. The baby is great." And she said, "Yes, well, it fell very casually, like so casually that I had to question if the baby would die if I gave birth at that time." And she said, "Yes." So I go on and I leave the office and I say, "You know what? I'm gonna fight for this pregnancy. This 20 weeks is the longest I've been pregnant. I've done all this work." I asked her if I could be on bed rest or if she could do another cerclage. She said no. So I told my village what happened, and we found a doctor in Texas who was infamous for doing high risk surgeries on high risk moms, especially after a cerclage failure. And he calls me and we talk for about an hour and he says, "I need you to fly to Dallas, Texas. We're gonna try. You know, you're fighting, I'm gonna fight with you." I flew to Texas, to Texas Health. Huge shout out to Dr. Falwell. He's amazing. But I flew to Texas and they rolled out the red carpet. I've never been treated like that before. From the security officer to everybody in the hospital, they knew I was coming. Like, this was his thing. And he gave me medicine to try to prevent contractions. And I was rolled back to the OR a few hours later. And that 3 hour surgery took 8 hours because I was on a plane, so much had happened. And he put in a transabdominal cerclage, which that doctor before didn't even tell me about, which would have been a permanent cerclage where I wouldn't have had to get it removed before going into labor. It just stays in with you. I do have to get a C-section, however, but it wasn't an option that was given to me. So that consent that I signed was not informed because all my options were not discussed. But nevertheless, he put in that transabdominal cerclage. And once the anesthesia wore off, the contraction set in. And they lasted for 30 hours. Despite all the medicine they gave me, they could not stop the contractions. And at the end of the 30 hours, my water broke, and I had to go back to the OR and get both cerclages removed. And he promised me to bring me back to Dallas outside pregnancy and to redo the cerclage. And he said, "You're going to be a mom." And I believed him. So I had some early miscarriages, but nevertheless, I made it to Dallas that November of 2021, got the cerclage. He also looked at my uterus for underlying inflammation, didn't find anything, and just made sure everything was cleaned out from the previous pregnancy. So I had a new slate, so to speak. That next year, May of 2022, I got pregnant and I was followed by a reproductive endocrinologist. I graduated to a different maternal fetal medicine doctor. My OB followed me the whole time, of course. And on December 30th, 2022, at 12:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I gave birth to my baby boy, who is now a potbelly 2-year-old toddler.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Yeah, and we often use the word journey to describe, people's experiences to building their family, but in your case, it
Yes.
absolutely is a journey of the ups and downs and the, lessons learned, and there's just so much in there that I think is something that people can relate to, because even those of us who have not had the number of losses that you have had, there's a lot of similarities in the experiences that you experienced. It just unfortunately multiple opportunities to have some of those experiences. I'm wondering how your experience as a nurse kind of impacted this, either positively or negatively, because I know sometimes people feel like having a little more information or familiarity with the healthcare system is a good thing, and sometimes it's a bad thing.
In my case, it was a life-saving thing in certain instances. I got really sick during that last pregnancy. In the third trimester, I couldn't sit up or stand up straight because my heart rate would go to the 150s, 180s. Normal heart rate is 60 to 100. My oxygen would just drop to the 80s. Normal oxygen saturation is 95 to 100. Mine would be 88, 87. I couldn't breathe. All these things just started happening out of the blue. And I'm like, okay, this isn't normal. So I will go to the ER. I can advocate for myself because I can speak the language. Like, this one I'm having is an adult health issue. It's not really a maternal health issue. So I was able to advocate for myself and talk about different medications, talk about different differential diagnoses that it could be. I ended up being diagnosed with POTS, which is a syndrome where your vertigo, that you become tachycardic or your heart rate goes up. And it could cause shortness of breath. The issue is, like, I had to be vertical. I couldn't lay down forever, So when my oxygen dipped, then it becomes a maternal health issue, right? Because if mom isn't getting oxygen, baby is definitely not getting oxygen. So we have to deliver. And I was prescribed oxygen, which I never got. So I had to deliver early. So things like that made being a nurse and going through this journey work in my favor. But then I'm also seeing healthcare through a different lens, which I had to because now I'm on this journey to help other moms. And I can help them from two perspectives, right? But it also made it scarier.
Has it changed how you practice and how you function as a nurse, even though you're, like you said, you're not in OB, but has it, have there been lessons that you have carried with you?
Yeah, so it made me view the way we're taking care, like the standards of care and the way we're taking care of patients differently. Like, I always put my patients in the shoes of if they were my grandmother or family member or somebody I truly, knew and was super close to me. They received that same type of care as I would as if they were my own. So that my compassion didn't change. However, I started to think about, okay, so I was a trauma nurse when all of this started. We never get training on maternal health. Yet I did have a maternal health patient. I called OB so fast, like, what are we supposed to do with this patient? She has milk coming out of her breast. She got a baby. Like, we're handling trauma. I don't know what to do with, the rest of the issues that she has going on, or just her state, which is pregnancy. You can't even like explain it. You like, she's pregnant. That's what's going on. And it's like, why aren't we getting that training? Why is the ER, most ERs not equipped for maternal health emergencies? Why, are critical care areas, unless you have like a women's health or maternal critical care area, why aren't we better equipped to handle these patients? I looked at it from those standard of care lens now. The deficits are glaring now. They're glaring to me. When a patient comes in, like, how are we, and they can't speak for themselves, how are we determining if they're in a postpartum period, which is very relevant to their care? There's nothing to show that. It did change the way I saw our standards and how I wanted to approach making changes in the healthcare system, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you're working with other families now, and we'll get to a little bit about, more of your programs, but what advice do you give to them on how to advocate for themselves and engage with the healthcare team in a productive way?
I give a lot of advice on that. A lot of my speech, when I do a lot of public speaking, I have turned my pregnancy loss journey into an interactive case study where the audience is the care team and they use a QR code to select the best care options for the patient, which is me, which I later on just tell them in the end. But I do a lot of advocacy training because it is so hard for patients to stand up for themselves. Or to switch care in a healthcare setting. I'm really big on advocacy. I actually have a program coming up called Speak Up, where I'm training moms in their village to learn how to advocate for themselves in the healthcare settings and become advocates in a political setting. But I often tell them, one, bring somebody with you. When you're pregnant, you're tired. Sometimes, if we're postpartum, we're depressed. Sometimes during pregnancy, it could be a lot, mentally, physically, emotionally, just everything. It's just a lot. You're dealing with a lot. So sometimes you aren't the best advocate, but have somebody who is willing to listen and to speak up on your behalf. Express your needs to them, just in case you need that, right? Because you don't want to be in the middle of a trauma, trying to fly to Dallas, and then you're also trying to advocate with all these doctors. That's the last thing you want, which is what I had to do. Two, get a doula. Doula is the best bridge between your doctor and your in-hospital, if you choose to have a healthcare team, and you. They're going to know how to speak the jargon and the language, and they're also going to know how to translate that to you if you don't have a healthcare background. Even if you do, you just need somebody on your side. I also tell them to that their care is in their hands. I do a lot of empowerment because some people are afraid of their healthcare team. They feel like whatever the healthcare team says, that's what I have to do. They're terrified. They're like, yeah, they know best. I'm not, whatever. And I like to empower our moms and our village and their villages to take that power back. You can choose who your maternal health team is. You can build that team. You can change that team if it gets to that point. And you have to be okay with the care that you're receiving. You and I go through patient rights and things like that. So it's a lot. It's a lot that of training that a lot of moms and villages don't get often, but it's definitely necessary. And really, it's not just a maternal health thing. I feel like that's across the board. That's just a
Absolutely.
healthcare thing.
Absolutely. I would agree completely with that. So why don't you tell us a little bit about A Light After Nine and the amazing work that you all are doing?
Absolutely. So I took a pregnancy hiatus for about a year and a half. And well, I'm still on it, but it was a year and a half from the time I gave birth to the time I started A Light After Nine, which is a non-profit organization that I started after having 9 pregnancy losses. The light is definitely my son. The light is also getting over this hump and getting through this pregnancy journey that sometimes I didn't think I would make it through. But we offer moms in their villages, their significant others, a lot of resources to help them navigate difficult pregnancy journeys. So, like I said, we do a lot of education and programs and maternal mental health resources. That was really big for me. I wouldn't have finished this journey without therapy, even hypnotherapy at some points. We vet providers for them. That's really big. Had I vetted my provider, maybe I wouldn't have had 9 losses. It's something to consider. I do a lot of advocacy work. We do a lot of training. I love training students because they're bright eyed and bushy tailed and they haven't touched a patient yet. And my story allows them to get real life examples of what it is to step into healthcare and the plight of the patient and how they can make those changes. I do advocacy. Spoke on Capitol Hill and Georgia State Capitol and things like that, telling my story, advocating for Medicaid expansion and other things to help pregnant persons. So we do a lot, and I love it, and I love talking to moms in their villages, and any way that I can be assistance to them, here I am.
I think that's just an amazing way to pay it forward in a very, very big way. But I know a lot of times, and I still get this question for myself too, but how do you manage the stress of working with lost families? Because that can be a very intense and emotional, work environment for sure. But then when you have a personal connection, there's a little extra layer there. So
Right.
how do you manage that?
So maternal mental health is super important, right? And it doesn't stop when your pregnancy journey stops. It continues, in my opinion, until you die. Like, you should always address that. So I am still in counseling every Thursday at 11 a.m. I still, do things to address my mental health, and I still address my triggers because I can talk about my story. Like I said, I've even made it into a presentation that I give fairly frequently. But every now and then, something about it gets me, and I'm able to work through those things in counseling. We offer guided journaling experiences through my organization. And I really sit in as a patient. Not as a patient, but as a family member, as a mom, I sit in on those events and I take notes when I'm not the one actually talking, and that's very therapeutic. I try to take a pause. There's so much happening in life and in the United States, and even politically, there's a lot of stressors that we don't even realize is causing us stress. So I try to find my ways to decompress as much as possible. Hypocritically, I'm not always the greatest at it at all. I'm not about to lie to you. I'm
I think
not.
that's a common trait among nurses. We all know
Yes.
that it's how important it is, but we may not necessarily be very good at
Right. We all know because at the same time, I'm a mom of a toddler and I just finished my master's degree. I'm about to start my doctorate degree in 8 days. And, I'm doing a whole bunch of things at once. So, but I
Absolutely.
try, I do try, and I acknowledge, when rest is needed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. How have you seen some of the stigma or just kind of lack of awareness around pregnancy and infant loss kind of influence some of the work that you're doing or impact some of the families that you work with?
You know, what has been a recurrent topic lately is the lack of acknowledgement for the postpartum period after loss. There is a postpartum period after a loss. Like, no matter how early you are, there is still a postpartum period, right? And it does matter when you are later on, because that could come in the form of you're expressing milk. You know, you're still having postpartum depression, anxiety, rage. You know, all of these things can still happen even if you're not bringing a baby home. So, that is something I address with our families all the time. And just that we talk about in our events and try to help navigate. It is so important to address that, and even to have them acknowledge that they're experiencing these things. Because some people are like, well, I still had to do this, and, but I had to go to work, so I just was like, I'm going to ignore it, you know. So we try to remind our families to just take a pause and acknowledge that postpartum period. That and
are you able to hear me? Oh.
I'm so sorry. My internet just glitched. I don't know what was going
Oh.
on. Did you catch any of that?
So
Or do you want me to?
I caught the first part, but if you could remember your second piece, that would be really helpful. So
Yes. What was the question? I'm so sorry. It was
talking about the some of the
the
stigma and lack of awareness that you've seen, and you when right before you froze up on me, you were talking about
Oh.
how people don't have a good understanding that there's still a postpartum
Yeah, oh
period.
yes, the postpartum. The
Yes.
other part regarding loss that I feel like is a stigma that people just completely denounces that despite of typically men not having to go through the physical symptoms of the loss, they're often forgotten about when it comes to depression, anxiety, rage, all of the mental health implications associated with pregnancy loss. And what we do at Ally After Nine is we have a guided journaling experience just for them so they could get out those thoughts and address them or even just sit with them, right? Or acknowledge that they're there. I know my husband at the time was very vocal about not having a lot of resources when I kept going through the loss. And it's something I believe a lot of men have the same sentiment when it comes to that.
Yeah, we absolutely hear the same type of things here at Star Legacy. So I think you're definitely onto something there. So, what if you are working with a lost family who is just beginning their lost journey? If we have someone listening today who is just brand new, maybe just in the last hours or days that they have, received this bad news, what advice would you have for them?
Definitely to give themselves some grace. There are so many things just pulling them in different directions. You have mental health pulling them in one direction. You have, oh, you need to go back to work, pulling them in another direction. You have, oh, your doctor saying, well, you can try again at any time, pulling them in that direction. It's just, and then you have some of us have kids, Some people experience loss and they still have kids, so you still have to be a mom. You still have to be an aunt and a daughter, and you have to show up to birthday parties and funerals, and you have to show up to other people's baby showers and so many things that you're expected to be at. So one, give yourself grace, and two, lean on your village. And I'm also saying that very hypocritically because I'm not good at leaning on anybody. But you should have those tough conversations. It just reminds me of a upcoming event called Afterbirth, Where's My Village, that we're hosting next month. And I need this event now because even later, it's just like villages, sometimes they taper off once you have the baby. But after loss, it's really hard for villages. I know a lot of my friends and family had secondhand trauma with a lot of the ways I lost my babies and just the amount of loss. It was a lot, And it's kind of hard to have those conversations to reel people back in when you need them during difficult times later on. So it's something that I encourage people to do. So when you see these events, just know I'm also a student of my own events as well.
Well, and
And
I
that,
think that's, yeah, I think that's a very like genuine but honest comment that again a lot of us can relate to because it speaks to how our grief changes, but it doesn't go away.
Right. It doesn't go
And we're all
away.
constantly working on it in some form or fashion.
Right.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and one of the things that you I've seen, in some of your work before is talking about how important it is to inspire hope for families and try to give them that sense of being able to find their own light at the end of their last journeys, whatever that looks like for them, and helping them to build out whatever kind of resilience it will take to get there. But
Right.
so what do you tap into? What gives you hope, and where do you find the strength to keep pushing forward?
That's a heavy question at this time. Because it's hard. Sometimes hope is like a muscle that you have to exercise. Right now, it's a very weak muscle for me. But during my pregnancy journey, it was really weak then. During my pregnancy journey, it was times where some of those losses knocked the wind out of you. They were traumatic, and you just didn't feel hope. Sometimes you were dependent on the hope of somebody else, a friend or your mom or your spouse. Sometimes you just don't have it to give, to hold on to. So it was a few things that carried me through the journey. Sometimes it was my own hope that ran out mid-journey, and it was other people's hope. And then it was the hope that my healthcare providers gave me. So they were like, oh, Rachelle, we didn't try this and we didn't try this, but we have to try this. Okay, now we got to try this. So I was like, well, if you're the type of person like me who feels like you have to exhaust all options before you give up or throw in a towel, then that does give you hope when your healthcare providers are like, well, we didn't try everything we could. If they did say, and which they did, once I got the transabdominal cerclage outside of pregnancy, that was literally it. Like, if I tried and made it past the first and second trimester and I didn't have that baby, that would have been it. I did have the baby though. So it worked out. The other thing was, like I said, I went to counseling every week, and that really helped keep it, that really helped keep me afloat throughout that journey. But it's hard. Life gets really rough, and you just don't know with all the twists and turns where you'll be at and what'll hit you. So sometimes you just have to lean on other people's hope and, do the best you can.
Absolutely.
But keep going, that's always been my thing. Sometimes I kept going hopeless, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the reality of this sometimes. I know your son is still very young, but are there things that you do as a family to honor and recognize all of these babies and their place in your family story?
Well, I honor them by telling a story, definitely. So I honor them frequently. I honor them frequently. There are some babies who made it to a point where I would remember every date. Like, there's a 7/18 loss that I had in Texas. There's October 31st. Halloween is one of my favorite holidays. And it will be one of my son's favorite holidays because he has three costumes every month. I mean, every Halloween and a photo shoot. but there are some that just stick with you. And sometimes I have like chains that, or like necklaces that my friends have given me, like lockets with their pictures and there are their footprints or their stats. Or demographic information like their names and their height and their weight and things like that. So we honor them in different ways, and they're always on my mind all the time.
When you mentioned the necklace, so maybe that kind of answers this next question. But are there things that your village did to help, bolster you and give you some of that support, especially when you were having some of those, hardest, most hopeless stretches of time?
Absolutely. So my love language is gifts and acts of service. So I got a lot of flowers throughout the years. Sometimes I look at my vase cabinet and I laugh. It's like about 40 vases in there. I started like using them to give out like Mother's Day flowers and things because it was just so many flowers from the losses. But like I said, they also gave me necklaces and different jewelry to commemorate them, and just different things. Sometimes we go out to eat, on certain days where we knew I had a loss and things like that. And, we honor them in different ways, and I definitely honor them with my nonprofit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what tell me what the future looks like. What are you hoping to accomplish? Or what are your next big things? I know you mentioned some of these events that you have coming up, but what are some of the other things that you are looking forward to through your organization?
So more speaking engagements. We have some major article releases coming out, so we can continue to tell this story. It's a very dynamic story, and people need to experience it, and hopefully that saves lives and change lives. But I'm also working on a self-advocacy app, because one of the big issues is in a healthcare setting, and not just in maternal health, but definitely in maternal health, is that we have a high mortality rate. And a lot of it is because we're not being listened to. And a lot of it is because we can't advocate for ourselves, because we're put in a position where we have to advocate for ourselves. But we can't speak the language. We don't feel empowered to speak against our healthcare providers, or to have certain conversations, or to switch. And this app would hopefully help them with all of that. So that's a big project that we're working on. We're bringing more education. We're partnering with schools as well. So I'm working on a big partnership, just to get the curriculum in the school, because as we know, in nursing school, it is very like hospital-based. Nursing school is like very cookie cutter. You got a little maternal health, a little critical care, a little bit of those specialties, but you're not really trained or educated on what it looks like to give culturally competent care, removing biases, compassionate care, language, racism in healthcare, and documentation that supports what the patient is saying, opposed to saying they're complaining and things like that. So that's what we have in store. It's a lot going on over here.
That is a lot, but it's so important, and we are just so excited to be able to kind of watch and do what we can to support the efforts and hopefully continue to collaborate and partner on some of those initiatives that will move all of this forward in so many realms that need a lot of work.
Yes,
So,
yes. A
yes.
lot of work. It takes a
It
village. It really takes a
does.
village.
There is plenty to be done, there's no doubt, but it gives me a lot of hope to see people like you who are just, demonstrating every single day what kinds of strength we draw from all of these experiences and are, kind of, I feel driven from our losses. And so I think there's definitely lots of runway for us to accomplish a lot of these very ambitious goals, but there's plenty of work to go around for sure.
Yes. We can
Yeah,
do it. I believe in us.
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time and for sharing your story. In such a beautiful way, you tell a very touching and heartbreaking story, but hopefully it's helping other people who may see themselves in pieces of your story too. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you
Like I
so
said,
much for having me.
absolutely. And like I said, we look forward to future opportunities to collaborate and keep this partnership moving. But to everyone else, thank you so much for taking the time to listen. And we hope that you will check out A Light After Nine, and then also follow us back here at Star Legacy Foundation.